extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from Kansas City. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle. What's it like to wander in the desert, to crawl in the sand, to wonder if you'll ever have a cool drink of water again, and then have the MLS Week 1 and home opener schedule come out? I am not parched anymore. I'm fully hydrated. I'm feeling great. I can keep on going, man. It's not a mirage anymore.
Anders, can we get a time mark on that? Because that might be the fastest broken Doyle in ETR history, or at least of the year so far.
Like, honest to God, David, he did the same thing yesterday on that Twitter Spaces thing that we tried out. I asked him a simple question of, like, of all of the MLS home openers, like, what is your favorite? Like, which one really grabbed you the most? And does it feel like MLS is back? And I got like a two and a half minute long monologue on how he's been a man wandering in the desert for months and months and months.
Well, Weeby, let's
say,
be real.
Just say a game.
Weeby, let's put it cards on the table. Have you ever actually even been in a desert?
I have been in a desert. Okay. I've always been well equipped when it comes to when it
comes to Desert Diamond Coffee. You better believe.
I've always had a lot of water on my person, so I've never been in that position. But I did feel like I was dragging myself through the winter. Yes, I enjoy throwing on Champions League and EPL and everything else at my house, but I don't care the same way. I just don't. It doesn't mean the same thing to me. I'm not as invested. Nobody pays me to talk about it either. That could also help. Just saying. But I am extremely, extremely excited by these home openers that MLS put out on Wednesday. We're going to go through all of them. We're going to dig through all these games, including first ever home matches in these new stadiums for Cincinnati and Austin. We're going to talk to Bruce Arena on this show. He stopped by for about 35 minutes to talk about a lot of things. Revs fans, you're going to be really happy. We dug deep on everything New England. I also was basically called an idiot by him twice. So there's that to look forward to. What's that prompted
only
on?
Twice?
Yeah.
We had the over under on that at 2.5. Yeah. And I hammered the over there. So
well,
Bruce is mellowing out in his old age.
I get to ask the questions.
Doyle, Bruce specifically knows you went over, so he went under because that's what
he's
he doesn't believe in your media hype.
Easy money. I asked him about I'm not gonna tease it, because then you'll know when he called me an idiot. So we'll just you'll save that for the interview. It's coming. We got the best goalkeepers and central midfielders in Major League Soccer today. Top fives on both. We've assigned central midfielders to David Goss. Goalkeepers have been assigned to Matt Doyle.
The opposite.
Incorrect. That's originally what I did. Then we flipped it. So you'll see when we get there. We got the mailbag. MLSsoccer.com real quick before we get these home openers. You can find all the information on them there as well. Matt, you've got some preseason pieces up. Big questions answered?
It's just stuff to look forward to. It was more of a mailbag than anything else, because I was kind of stumped for stuff to write about this week, so I just opened it up on Twitter, like, tell me what you guys are excited for. And it, more than anything else, even neutrals, excited to have Joseph back. Like, super amped to watch that guy play soccer again. And then there's a lot of folks who were excited about, you know, a new team coming in Austin. You know, I think there's a lot of excitement in Central Ohio. Crew fans are riding high, as they should be. So I just wrote about that and, like, why, for the most part, why those people are right to be excited. And then for a couple teams, I wrote, like, maybe you want to tamp down that excitement a little.
And maybe that's Cincinnati. Maybe it is. But they signed Lucho Costa, according to a lot of reports. Not officially yet. We'll talk about that. There is
Brucho?
No, I don't have it yet. Give me some time. I had to reuse material off the top of this show. You think I got that ready to go for you? I don't. I don't have that ready to go for you. One guy who's definitely excited for Joseph, Sam Jones. 8 extreme predictions for the 2021 season at MLSsoccer.com. And then I had my 5 games to watch among these home openers. Let's get right into it. MLSsoccer.com is the place. The season starts April 16th. So if you had April 17th sort of like branded in your brain, which I definitely did, we can't rebrand, but, you know, tweak that a little bit. The first game of the season, Dynamo Quakes, ESPN Plus, 8 p.m. Eastern. That's Viernes de Football, baby. That's a classic. And then right after that one, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, Sounders, Minnesota United. Throwback to the playoffs last year. What a crazy game that was. Should be really, really fun. Get Reynoso in there. Get Ladero. 9:30 p.m. Eastern, as I said, on FS1. Into Saturday, into Sunday. Then we have some games in week two that we know locations on because it's home openers. And then we also know that FC Cincinnati opens their new stadium on Fox against Inter Miami on May 16th, and on Saturday, June 19th, Austin FC open Q2 against the Quakes on Unimas. So we'll get to those as well. What's the one, and I already gave my opinion, what's the one, Dave, that really just grabs you? You look at this list, you look at the schedule, and you say, that one. I don't care what is on my schedule. I don't care what people ask me to do. I'm busy. I got to watch it.
So I'm going to watch every game.
Yeah, yeah, that's a given.
Do I have to still pretend like this thing's real?
Yeah, yeah, that's a given, obviously. Okay. Look, even though Dave, when you're
water on Friday, yes. Even though I'm in the desert, it's a day early.
Exactly. When you're in the desert, water is water. Doesn't really matter where it comes from.
Okay, so I'm going to go Sunday. I'm really excited for that first Sunday. There's three games. But in the middle, you've got Columbus versus Philly, MLS Cup champion against Supporters Shield champion. We feel like Columbus has gotten better. I question where Philly's at, and not in a negative way, but you're losing two phenomenal players. You're losing one of the best center backs in MLS and a guiding light in Aronson coming through and then being sold for a record amount. So what's next? What is, this next stage for the Philadelphia Union? And they can prove it pretty early because they're playing against the best team, in my estimation, in the league coming into the year. And then I'm going to sneak another one in there following that up. You've got Vancouver, who's my sleeper excited team, playing against the Portland Timbers. So you've got Cascadia. You've got a Vancouver group that's added a lot of pieces. And the Timbers group that should be one of the top teams in MLS as well. So that Sunday, the whole weekend closes out really high for me.
It's really cool, too, because you get Cascadia in Utah. Like, that's 2021, man. A little bit bizarre, a little bit strange. Still got that classic aspect to it on the rivalry side. Can I just throw something out here? And I'm coming into the private chat here where Anders is having an absolute blinder to start this show. He says that Crew Philly game is a de facto Super Cup. What if we did this every year? What if every year, unless it's a double, obviously, MLS Cup and Supporters Shield play in week one in like an honored position instead of, getting that game that, like, I don't know what it's even called anymore in England. Like, I don't care. But like, if it's a regular season game and it matters and it's not just sort of a throwaway in the preseason, I'm into it. I like it.
This is Andrew Wiebe to a T. We've slammed you enough this show, but to take something that naturally happened well and go, what if we do this every time and we jam this in and then we make it a theme and then I start every show with it.
All right, I will back away quietly now. Doyle, please play.
Are you gonna create like an ETR Super Cup and like award it to the winner of Columbus versus Philadelphia?
See, Dave, this is where good ideas come from. Somebody's got to throw out the garbage. Somebody's got to throw the garbage out, and then here comes Doyle to recycle it, and something beautiful comes.
I'm going to go with Doyle's theme. I'll make a proposal. You give a Thor hammer away because we've already done Captain America shield.
That's true.
I'm in the middle of a Marvel rewatch, just throwing it out there.
Look at that.
All right. So Weeby has to figure out how to make a Thor hammer sometime over the next
month.
It's fine.
I moved to Kansas City. I have a forge in my backyard here. Yeah.
You just find it.
I'll repurpose my smoker. It'll be really simple. What's the one game for you? Come on, Doyle.
Which one did you choose, Weeby?
I chose, and I think this is the obvious one for me. There are two that are sort of like in the Weeby wheelhouse of great narratives. Second place would be the ABC game on Sunday, which is Inter Miami against LA Galaxy. Phil Neville's first game.
He says it's
the Beckham Bowl. I don't personally think the Beckham Bowl is the best name, but maybe we can have some like agreement from the listeners on that.
Well, you pronounce it Beckham Bowl.
Okay. I'm more into that.
Doyle's about to throw
I'm off. More into that. Can we get Bobby to come back to pronounce that for us?
Oh, my goodness.
I think that could work well. A little punchy to start this one. I'm enjoying it, man.
Yeah.
Mine is LAFC hosting Austin FC, and that's because I have thought a lot, and it's natural to think a lot about expansion teams, especially when there is just the lone one coming in, which is kind of strange these days in MLS. But I think Austin's going to be really good. But immediately, they are going to have to reach a level that is basically the very, very top. Like, off the jump, you go to LA, you got Bob Bradley's team that's got a lot to prove after, what, a seventh place regular season last year. I know CCL was good, but the regular season and MLS Cup chase were not good for them. You got Carlos Vela back, so I will watch Vela anytime he is available to play. I need Carlos Vela in my life. So can they reach that? Can Josh Wolf reach that? What was team look like in that first game against such a difficult opponent?
So I'm going to interrupt you. That's what I'm really interested in terms of Austin. More than anything else in this game, I loved watching Greg Berhalter's crew teams. They were effective, but like beyond that, they were just aesthetically pleasing. They played really, really fun soccer. And of course, Josh Wolf was an assistant coach for Greg Berhalter for more than half a decade. And the way that he's building this team, I assume that they're going to play something like the latter stage crew, or even how the U.S. national team have played under Berhalter over the past year. And that is, again, it's an effective and aesthetically pleasing way to play soccer. And I want another aesthetically pleasing team in MLS. So more than anything else with this Austin debut, I want to see what Josh Wolf's principles of play are, how he's going to use Alex Ring, what they're going to do with those other two midfield slots, whether they're going to be kind of like free eights like we're seeing from the national team, or is
Pochettino
name?
Yeah,
Pochettino, if he's going to be more of a true 10. So all of that, I'm pretty gassed about that game. And the other thing that I made this point in my column, Greg Berhalter was kind of the striker whisperer in Columbus. He got more productivity out of guys like Kai Kamara and Ola Kamara than they'd ever seen any other stop in their careers before or since. And obviously Jossie Zardes as well. The one thing I've been bagging on Austin for, and I love their build almost all spots, I don't love their center forward rotation. They have Danny Huijsen, Aaron Schoenfeld, and John Gallagher. And all three of those guys are like journeymen, like not starters, like fringe 18, game day 18 type of players. And like, I want to see if Josh Wolf can make magic for these guys the way Greg Berhalter's system made magic for Ola and Kai and Jossie. So like you, I'm probably most amped about that game. That said, I referenced it earlier. Joseph's back,
mm-hmm.
and he's playing against Orlando City.
Yes,
in the first weekend of the year. I'm like, I have goosebumps. I just said
it's
it.
Poetic.
I just got goosebumps.
It's poetic.
Yeah,
it really is.
I can't wait. And Gabriel Heinze is another coach who his teams have played really, really attractive soccer and effective soccer down in Argentina. I want to see if he can bring that to an Atlanta United team that the first 2 years in the league, they were a joy to watch and have just been a turd since then.
I mean, we've made a lot of jokes about Orlando over the years, in particular because of their treatment by Atlanta, and that's where the Orlando comes from. And, we have the whole Josh Bindic glance back by Joseph, and in particular, Joseph has been the boogeyman. He's been like, the nightmare from up the road who just comes down and mocks you and dominates you and is the protagonist.
No player in MLS history has owned an opponent the way Joseph has owned Orlando. And Orlando was legitimately one of the best teams in the league last year, and Atlanta was one of the worst, but they have Joseph back, and Orlando's going to be almost complete and healthy. Oscar Pereja is one of the best coaches in the league. This game is awesome. Yeah. This game is going to feel like a playoff game in week one. I cannot.
It feels to me a little bit like a seesaw, like a teeter totter. And for a long time, Joseph was just sitting on one end, and Orlando City were just dangling, and he was just laughing at him. And last year was the equalizer. Like Oscar came in, and he was an alchemist, let's say, with the culture of that club, because the culture had been basically, when's the shoe going to drop, and it always did. So now the culture is more: we are winners. We can be winners. We can be even better than we were before. We're in it together. I'm not sure they ever had that. And Atlanta's now in this position that they're not familiar with, which is, we kind of got slapped down a little bit. Like, we aren't maybe exactly what we thought we were, which is, like, the big dog, the example that everybody looks towards. So that's why it's so fascinating to me, is that it's this rivalry, which didn't used to be a rivalry because Orlando never won a game, is sitting on this sort of, like, precipice moment. Which way is it going to lean? Can Orlando step on their side and say, oh, we actually own this now? Or is Atlanta going to come back with a roar and just be like, nah, you had your year. We are still the big boys. It's going to be such a fun game. There's a great matchups elsewhere. You got to play your kids. Derby too. You go ahead. Jump
can
in.
I toss one in here? Mm-hmm. Because I know you've got, you're going to list every game.
Okay. So I mean, you would too. Come on.
Absolutely. I think there's one that we've been sitting on, or a storyline we've been sleeping on. Shockingly for you, Weeby, this could be a rivalry.
Oh my.
You could have created, which I didn't think of. Chris Hole sent us an email, so shout out to him in the mailbag, that says the Cincy-Nashville rivalry. And we haven't talked about it at all. We don't have a name. Even though they've not played a single match against each
other.
What?
Yeah, they haven't.
Yeah.
Yeah, they haven't played each other.
But this is a USL rivalry, and this is a city rivalry. Mm-hmm. The two teams already have a tense history, which includes playoff games, going to penalty kicks, players taunting opposing fans with Big Bird-themed goal celebrations. Can't believe it's been 2 years since their last competitive match, and even though both teams were coolly denied a chance to play last year, there was already the fire in the fans. He's going to start working on a name for the rivalry. We've got some recommendations in here. So I looked it up. It's about 4.5-hour drive between the two. As he said, they've played in the USL. They've played already as franchises. So there's some energy here. They are playing on the first week for the first time in this home opener. We've slept on this rivalry, Weeby, and you have one sitting in front of you.
Yeah, I was asleep. But here's the thing. I was asleep at the wheel while driving because I put this in my top five games. I didn't know. I feel like an idiot. I feel so stupid. That's three. Bruce Arena, you lose the bet. I'm three times an idiot in this show, so now it's over the 2.5. Because I put it in there for chaos reasons. Because I think this game has a lot of that in it. And two teams that look at the other one and say, I can use you in week one to sort of prove what I might be or what I might not be. On Nashville's side, they keep talking about how they're going to be more expansive, that they're not going to be the 10 guys behind the ball team. Or, you know, if Charlie was here, he'd be doing the beep, 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 like back up the bus theme. Well, Cincinnati is negative 68 goal differential in 2 years. Like, if you are going to lay one on somebody in week one, you better lay one on Cincy. You know what I mean? Like, you're the playoff team, Nashville. You're the team that did all these things that people didn't think you could do. Well, keep doing it. And on Cincy's side, it's a little more simple. It's like, are we still a train wreck? Are we still a tire fire? Is there progress here? If you lose 4-0 on opening day and Brenner doesn't look the part and Locati is lost and the new pieces aren't working and defensive midfield is in shambles, like, that's a bad scenario for them. So I just think both of them have a ton at stake. And now we have the rivalry aspect. Like, it's perfect. It's perfect.
And we've got some name recommendations. One is the Bohemian Derby.
Ooh, I like that.
Whatever we're going to call it. Queen City plus Music City. That's okay. The idea. The other one is the Kentucky one, because one's 30 seconds from Kentucky, the other one's 30 minutes. So the winner gets to keep Kentucky for the year as their trophy going forward. Or the Bluegrass one. I like that.
Let me know, Nashville and Cincinnati fans, is Kentucky a prize? Do you want Kentucky?
It would be really weird to name a rivalry between teams in Ohio and Tennessee after Kentucky.
That's history, baby. That's why in 100 years everyone's like,
I know you cross over Kentucky, but like the Red Bulls DC United rivalry isn't called the Maryland Derby, you know, or I guess would be the Belmont Stakes if we want to keep the horse racing theme. That one's weird to me.
All right. Cold water poured on that one.
Cold water. Yeah, that's me. Yeah. Sorry.
Some other interesting ones, and we'll keep it rolling here. I thought that Red Bull Sporting KC was interesting because Sporting was sort of the original pressers, and now Red Bulls are the ones that carry the mantle. So that's at 1 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. I liked the Play Your Kids match here between Dallas and Colorado on Saturday as well. And I've also decided that I am going to be supporting the Fire in a sympathetic, please be better sense. They play the Revs, and I think the Revs, as we'll talk with Bruce, have a lot of potential this year. Before we move on here, how about these home openers?
Wait a minute. If you're repping the Fire, you got to put some stakes on it. The Fire make the playoffs this year. You're doing a brown liquor special where your liquor is Malort.
Yes. Done.
That's signing your name in blood. Yes. You're making sure if the Fire make the playoffs, there will be
I will buy a large quantity of Malort and consume it in the safest way possible while I celebrate my Chicago Fire making the playoffs. All right, how about these home openers for Cincy and Austin? Do you like Cincy Inter Miami as a first matchup? That's on May 16th on Fox. What do you think? Is that a good fitting matchup? I mean, obviously Hell is Real would have been ideal, but you can't get everything you want. You know what I mean?
I mean, what am I going to say? No. Like, of course, like, I'm looking forward to all of these games. It'll be fun because we'll be a month into the season, and the question is the same for both of these teams, which is, are you still going to be a train wreck? We won't really have an answer. Like, we won't have a concrete answer at that point. But if it's going real bad at that point for one or the other, there could be very real pressure already at that point in the season.
I'm working on getting vaccinated so I can be a part of the march. Cincy fans know that if I am, they shall win this game. No doubt about that. Austin Quakes, Dave, you feel like that's a good jumping off point for this one? It's a little bit strange to me. Like, I don't know if Quakes would have been the first team I picked out of the hat to say Austin opened their stadium against.
Yeah, it's the tech venture capitalist Darby. Everyone knows that. Come on, Weeby.
Like, come on.
We're all going to be watching it in 3D from space for free. The whole world's going to change.
Everybody going to be wearing their microfiber vests or no?
Exactly.
I'll have to go get one of those. Anyway, MLSsoccer.com. All the home openers are there. Go check it out. Start to make your schedule for the beginning of the season.
Canadian Classique. Obviously, I didn't. Not a home game for anyone, but still a massive one to start for Wilfred Nancy.
That's true. Off the jump. Yeah.
And maybe even bigger for Chris Armas.
True.
Because, like, I don't think Wilfred Nancy has that much pressure to win right away. Chris Armas does. Chris Armas very much does. And that, you know, there have been rumors about Santos Borre and does Josie want out, and Iowa Canola's health is a concern. And, like, they're already kind of behind the eight ball, it seems. So that is another early game that for at least one of the teams is going to feel like a playoff, going to feel like a playoff game. Because if it gets bad fast for Toronto, the pressure will mount real quick.
All right. One of the other games we didn't mention, but I just want to throw this out there because I want to hear from New York City FC fans. DC NYCFC on Saturday, Ronnie Dyla came out and said that they don't have a squad with the depth and quality to compete or like make a run. Basically, he said that they need another 10 and another 9. So
that sounds familiar. Coach, NYCFC, depth, transfers. No, maybe not.
Nah. Brush right over it. NYCFC fans, let us know what you think. I want to hear what you think. Atlas is confirming that Lucho Acosta has been transferred to FC Cincinnati. Cincinnati is not confirming this. Pablo Maurer, who I believe has a direct line, if I had to guess, to Lucho, is saying that this is going to happen. We've been saying this is going to happen for a long time. How much of a difference maker is Lucho going to be for Cincy, Doyle?
That is literally the $1 million or millions of dollar question. Lucho has had 5 good months in 5 years. You know, he was amazing down the stretch in 2016, and he was amazing down the stretch in 2018, and he was mostly not good for the rest of his time in MLS, and he's been a disaster for Atlas. He has, what, 3 goals and 2 assists in 2 years? I understand why they want to take a chance on a guy who knows MLS and has been really productive at times in MLS, but I you know, this Cincinnati team, they need a focal point. They need a guy who's going to be there every week, can be their Ladero. And Lucha has never been that type of guy, whether it's here or in Liga MX. It is going to be fascinating to see how this works.
I love Cincinnati fans' enthusiasm and positivity right now, but it does feel to me a little bit like, you know, they're like driving on ice and one little bump or like miscorrection is just going to leave them careening. We'll see how it goes for them this year. Vancouver went out and signed a right back, Bruno Gaspar. He's a 27-year-old Portuguese guy. He's got a pretty good resume, some big clubs in there. It's a loan with an option to buy. We'll see how that works out for him. He is not a number 10. He is a right back. So still waiting on that one. And then Atlanta United and Red Bulls teamed up for a pretty funny one. Dave, Andrew Gutman, who's now been on how many MLS rosters? I mean, I guess he was a homegrown for the Fire, but he never signed. And then he went back around. He went to Celtic. He played for Cincinnati for a hot second. Well, now Atlanta United traded for him. Now Atlanta United, quote unquote, bought him from Celtic. And then they loaned him to Red Bull. What's going on? Why?
You've got in there as well. Nashville USL tried to loan him and was denied.
I forgot that.
They weren't even in at the time.
So I knew there was one more. I was like, there's four teams. I can't remember what the other one was.
Yeah, but for Atlanta, this is their replacement for Bello. And so Bello's the starter this year. The hope is if he plays well, there's a sell on coming. And so you don't have a spot for Gutman right now. And if you look at for the Red Bulls, this is what, their fifth loan to the first team already. So you got a new group coming in. But with COVID and the way the world works, I think it's tough to make signings because you don't know how guys are going to fit in. You're not able to go out and meet them and do all the things you normally do. So it makes sense across the board. And we talked about it with Sebastian Berhalter, I think 2 weeks ago. Expect more loans inside the league. For now, there's so many teams, and with teams having academy systems, you just need to get minutes for players. And so if it's not USL, maybe it is another team in MLS.
I think also you have to assume that a lot of teams are looking at the summer and saying that's when the real work's going to get done. Because if you look at this schedule here and some of these home openers, like, you'd have to be crazy not to have a little bit of a backloaded schedule. And it started late anyway. So there'll be less games than normal that'll be at stake from like what would used to be March to summer, which is now mid to late April to that summer window. So LA's got some news too. They may have signed a guy out of Monaco. We'll see what goes down with that. Tom Bogert's reported on it. Tommy Scoops at Tom Bogert on Twitter. He'll keep you updated on all the transfer stuff. Let's do our top five, what we originally called box-to-box midfielders. Doyle, before you name your five, you got beef. You got a complaint about the framing.
So yeah, the way that these top fives are framed, it's almost like every team is expected to play a 4-2-3-1 where everybody has, you know, similar roles, and it just doesn't work that way. Like, it's like 6 years ago you could have said that. Like, 6 years ago it was like something like 20 out of 22 teams played a 4-2-3-1, but there's just more diversity in terms of position and function, and so it's really hard to just say this guy's a box-to-box midfielder, like this guy is a true number eight. Well, what's a true number eight? And so do it like sticking me with the central midfielders, which you did because I had technical difficulties in the pre-show meeting.
Sorry, I can't hear. I don't know what are you saying.
Yeah.
You're cutting out.
Classless from the both of you and Anders as well.
I just saw Doyle's like very British version of like raging against the authority, except we're the ones who decided this and we're sitting in here. He's like, the setup of this, whoever set this up is an idiot.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I'm right here. You can just say my name.
Don't ever accuse me of being British again. Don't ever do that again.
So what we settled on here, right, is that it's not box-to-box midfielders. It's central midfielders that aren't easily put into the defensive mid-box or the number 10 box. So there's a lot of profiles outside of that. Let's start at number one. Who's your number one central midfielder in Major League Soccer for 2021?
Mark Anthony Kay. And I would have gone in a different direction up until his performance in CCL, because Mark Anthony Kay has looked great at times, but he has routinely come up short in big games. And then I thought he was awesome in all three of those games in December, and maybe he was able to sort of turn the page. Number two, like, Ale Bedoya was the best, quote, central midfielder in the league last year, except he wasn't actually a central midfielder. He was a shuttler because Philly play a 4-4-2 diamond. And so it's a kind of a different skill set, but we've also seen Ale be that guy in a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3. And I know this is going to drive a lot of people nuts because he doesn't show up in the box score at all, almost at all. But he does so much for that team on both sides of the ball. And he is a net positive for a good team every single week. And that is exactly what you want in the middle of the pitch. The question I have with Philadelphia, and I'm getting sidetracked here, is Jamiro Montero going to be in that position again this year? Or is he going to go back to being a number 10, which is where he was 2 years ago? I actually think I like him a little bit more as a shuttler. But that's TBD. If he plays as a shuttler, though, like, he might actually surpass Ale in this position. Number three, Eric Williamson. Brave about getting on the ball in the toughest spots. Super dynamic on the ball, less so off the ball. He still needs to refine some of his off balls, like creating penetration, delayed runs, the sort of stuff that Bedoya does. Williamson doesn't do that, which is, I think, just a function of not having enough reps. And, you know, a net positive defensively every single week. I thought this kid should have been the centerpiece of the U.S. U-23 Olympic qualifying midfield. I can't believe he didn't make that roster. Like, it's just, I'm beside myself at that. He was fantastic. And it's not, he was fantastic during MLS's back, in terms of giving Portland a different dimension than they had had in the past couple of years by opening up the game with this ball progression and, again, that courage to get in tough spots. But then once they lost Sebastian Blanco and had to become more of a counterattacking team again, he was still really, really, really good. So he's easily top
three. We've hit the top three, and I have a big flag already for you, and maybe it's just on your definition here. It's Darlington Nagbe.
No, I don't think it does. I think it's – this is Doyle's rankings, right?
Yeah. Okay, so I'm just asking. Is he in your top five?
I don't think it's a coincidence that the Crew played their best game of the season with a more direct player in for Darlington
Nagbe.
Okay,
who's number four?
Jan Gregis. Maybe the most underrated player in the league right now, can switch the field with either foot, gets forward to provide like just scorchers from the top of the box, and is able to use the space that front line and Bibello creates by pinning defenders back. Smart about timing his runs, not super dynamic on the ball in terms of his ball carrying, and needs a little bit of protection defensively. But I'm okay with that, given how much he adds to that team. And then number five, I'm looking at my list.
This is the tough part, right? Because you got a lot of names in there that deserve shouts. Christian Roldanwood, I think Alvaro Medrón, shout out to the Fire of Goon, Marky Delgado, Jonathan Osorio, Keaton Parks, Jackson Ewell. I think you.
So I don't really have Osorio as a box-to-box guy. I don't have him as a central midfielder. I think he's more of an attacking midfielder or like a playmaker.
You could bring 2019 Paxton Pomykal back to life. And
yeah. So, I mean, if Pomykal is healthy, then he would be at or near the top of the list. But it's such a big if. I can't even put him on the list at this point. Tanner Tessman could get there. But
I'm sorry. Tanner Tessman cannot be on this list ahead of Darlington Nagbe. And I understand you like different attributes in players, but he is probably the cleanest player on the ball in the league. He is the easiest player to connect. He probably is the most helpful player when you're being pressed, especially for his teammate. Mm-hmm. There is no safer player in this league to play out through. And for a team that wants to dominate possession, that is important. So you could say he doesn't have the effect in the final third that you want, but the other two thirds of the field.
Also doesn't have an effect defensively. And like he doesn't pass the ball forward, Dave.
You just put Jan Gregus in this list, who's in my list, who you said needs cover defensively and doesn't progress the ball himself. Mm-hmm. So you have a player on this list.
No, I said he doesn't carry the ball.
Yeah.
He passes the ball forward.
Yeah. But he
Nagbe doesn't do that.
Understood, but Nagbe doesn't have to, because he has Zellerayan, now he has Molino, he has Pedro Santos. That's not what's asked of him. It's to dominate possession so you can get those fullbacks into the attack and give the options for those next guys and make it so that everyone can step up the field so that no one has to worry about turning it over. I can understand the debate around him, but he's top five. That's all I'm thinking.
I really appreciate his press resistance and his smoothness on the ball, and he's supposed to be a great teammate, and he has improved defensively. He is poor in the repress. He is average at best in other defensive facets of the game as a central midfielder, and he does not pass the ball forward. And that is not a guy who cracks a top five.
Okay. Who's
so for five, I'll put Keaton Parks.
Okay. Walk us through Keaton Parks.
Just smooth. He's press resistant. He does pass the ball forward. He has gotten better defensively, though I don't think you want him stuck in a 1v1 situation. But that's why you have James Sands. Parks is another one, like Williamson. I'm shocked that he is not part of this U23 team. It doesn't make any sense from a U.S. soccer perspective. But, yeah, he would be – I would take him over Nagbe. I would take him over.
Oh, wow. There's some debate to be had here. Crew fans, sharpen those knives.
So I'll say this for this list, because I think Doyle put Parks and Williamson, and then you look at a few guys under it. I think this is the list that has the most potential – for guys to jump in this year. So you talked about Tessman. I still think Christian Casares could jump into this. Frankie Amaya, another guy, depending on where he lands, what he does. Kellen Acosta, if he has a big year. So I think this is a list where there's a lot of guys in the league already who could make big jumps to get higher up into this list. But I agree with four of the five on Doyle's, and I'm not – Williamson was the one I didn't have. I love Eric Williamson. I think he was great. I'd like to see it another year, but yeah.
Can I just throw another name out here? Because I know, I joked about Crew fans there, but I know that Anders is back wherever, you know, in New York producing this thing, deleting private chats about Christian Roldan here. Do you consider Roldan a central midfielder? And if you do, why has he not been mentioned so far? I can accept him not being in the top five, but not being mentioned, I think, is a miss for us.
But we're gonna, because it's like classic Weeby. You just have to list every player in the league at the position.
Oh my god!
Well, he played most of last year on the wing. Yeah, but
that's fair.
Right now, Roldan is he's kind of a poor man's Bedoya. Poor man isn't the, but he's a Bedoya light at this point. Now I think he can still get better, and I think he's shown that. He was awesome against LAFC in the playoffs last year. He outplayed Mark Anthony Kay completely. But he's another guy who's not super dynamic on the ball. When he's in that position, his range of passing isn't great. He's not that press resistant. And I like, those are the things that I kind of look for the most part from that position. The other thing though, like with Nagbe and Jackson Yuhl, those guys play at the base of their midfield. Wouldn't those guys be more listed as defensive midfielders rather than central midfielders, given the way Columbus and like Artur pushes higher up the field than Darlington Nagbe does?
Yeah.
Goodson pushes higher up the field than Jackson Yuhl does. So how do we categorize these guys?
Yeah, I think that's fair, because I didn't put Artur in my defensive midfield conversation because I don't consider him a defensive midfielder. And now he's just going to get left
this
out.
This is why I hate,
we're not putting him in.
This is why I hate your top five lists.
Yeah. Uh-huh. This is why you're bottom five, Doyle, in my top five pickers.
That's fine. I'm happy holding up the table.
All right, we got goalkeeper to come, Dave, so you have your opportunity here. In the meantime, we did chat on Wednesday with Bruce Arena of the Revs about all different things under the sun. I think you're going to really enjoy this interview. Take a listen. We'll be right back. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. We are going out to New England to Bruce Arena. You know him well. You know his reputation. You know what he's building with the Revs. Bruce, how's it going? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be on today.
All right, let's talk about it. And we'll get to the Revs. They have a lot of questions there, some bigger questions about North American soccer. But there's been one thing that's been inescapable for all of us over the last year, and that is this pandemic, COVID-19. I'm curious what life has been like for you and your family during this time. How have you experienced this thing that no matter where you are, you're in the middle of it?
Well, I don't think life has been great, but I think people in our profession are fortunate. We've had it a lot better than a large majority of the public, so I'm not complaining. The simple issues we have, can't visit grandchildren, which is troubling. Obviously, living in a great city like Boston and not being able to get out too much is a little bit awkward. But having said that, I think throughout this pandemic, we've been very fortunate. The players and coaches in Major League Soccer, the league's been very supportive. The crafts are great to work with in New England. So I am not foolish enough to complain about any of the issues we have. I think it's been a tough time for all Americans, and I certainly understand and feel their pain. It's been a tough year for sure.
Forget the soccer side, Bruce. What about the personal side? You mentioned Boston. You haven't got to experience it. You could go to a Yankees Red Sox game and sit there and maybe heckle the home team. You could. Yeah. What's on your list, man? Like, what is the, hey, when this is over, the pandemic is abating, or we all are vaccinated, what are you doing? What's on the to-do list?
I live in a great area in Boston. I live in a Seaport, which is the new, kind of like the new district there. It's really a fabulous area, and we're close to the North End, which is the Italian section. I can walk to the Boston Garden from where I live. So there's a lot of good things ahead this summer. So I'm hopeful that the pandemic subsides a bit. We have good weather and we can enjoy being in Boston.
So we all can't wait to get back to normal. But there are things in moments like this where you're forced into doing things differently. And obviously you've, you know, run professional soccer teams for 20 years, coached soccer for 30 plus. But sometimes things stick, you know, you're forced into it and then you realize, oh, maybe this works. Maybe this was better. Have there been any things, you know, operating the last year or so at the Revs that you think you've learned from this or that you'll carry on going forward?
That's a hard question to answer because last year was so unusual. The start of the season, then that 4 month break, and then not to be critical of protocols we had. We had some of the stupidest things we were doing with our team. Four players on the field in quadrants. I'm not going to copy that again the rest of my life. And a lot of things we still do that are challenging. But we're back training in normal conditions now. But last year was something I don't think is ever going to happen again. And I give the coaches in the league a lot of credit. The players that we managed to survive it with all the protocols. You know, we played, it seems like, the same teams week in and week out. We had six games against Philadelphia, I think five against Montreal, four against DC United. And then the fact that somebody thought that there should be a Supporters Shield winner was, in my view, completely ridiculous. So it was a weird year. You know, we didn't play half the teams in our conference. And so, you know, it was an interesting experience. I don't want to see it again. One thing we did learn, and we're probably going to carry it on this year for a bit anyway, is traveling on game day and playing. And that was something obviously pretty unusual for professional teams. And we managed well with that. Our team actually played better on the road than we did at home. So maybe that's a positive from 2020 we can carry forward in 2021.
I'm one of those people, Bruce, that said I was fine with a supporter shield, that I think it was appropriate. Tell me why I was wrong.
What is the meaning of the supporter shield?
The best team in the regular season. And I get that the schedule was screwy. I get it.
Three quarters of the teams, you're not the best team in a regular season.
But did that happen before? You know, we were giving it out in crazy times with messed up schedules.
Somewhat more of a competitive type of schedule. It was a complete, you know, awkward. It made no sense, to be honest with you. It just made absolutely no sense. But I'm happy everyone's happy. It's done with. And in all fairness, give Philadelphia credit. They did very well. Give Columbus credit for winning the MLS Cup. But we're not going to see a year like that again.
Did we see soccer that was in any way reflective of any of these teams' real capabilities? Like with the Revs, we probably didn't see you guys at what you really truly were and could be, no?
I'm not sure that by the end of the year we were a good team, but I think I said this before we went into the bubble, that and when we were in the bubble, that this whole year is going to be highly unpredictable, and in the end likely the best teams won't be standing around, and that was the case. I think this year you're gonna truly see that the best teams are going to be up there. It's going to be much more competitive. We have to, you know, at the very least, we have to play everyone in our conference to really see where we stand in the league. So last year, in my view, made no sense competitively, but I think it was an incredible accomplishment from the league and the players and coaches to complete a season. So that part was absolutely tremendous.
So 2021, are the Revs going into it one of the best teams? The odds makers we talked about on the last show have you guys middle of the pack, which we disagreed with. Where do you stand?
Any team I've ever had, I always refrain from talking in preseason about if anyone's any good or not. When we start on April 17th, we can start discussing that. And then when we get around to about September, we'll actually know.
All right, how about this? What was your priority in the offseason? Are more additions possible? We got Revs fans in our mentions on Twitter wanting to know about this left winger from Malmo that the rumors are popping up on. Could there be more signings?
How'd you hear about that? I didn't know that. See,
you know that
I don't follow social media.
You're better off for that. I'll tell you that, Bruce.
Yeah. We will likely add another player in the near future. And then, you know, hopefully we'll have the option of adding another player in the summer. But I think our roster, the off season, not that it was perfect, but we answered a lot of the questions we had about our roster. So I think we have a stronger roster from top to bottom. You know, I could see it in training already. We have a better roster this year than we did in 2020. What that means in the end, who knows? You know, maybe we don't win as many games. we can't win 8 games next year. We're in trouble.
I was thinking about this as I looked at your transactions, and of course AJ's back, and you know him well, and are so familiar with him. And I was thinking, okay, 2011, which doesn't seem that long ago to me, but is 10 years now. In 2021, the rules have changed. The landscape has changed for you as you construct a team. What is the difference in your mind, as someone who has their hands in the clay, so to speak, between building an MLS team now and 10 years ago?
I don't think it's less restrictive now, but around 2011, we started having a lot of the rules we have now. There's certainly more resources now with the TAM. We always had some kind of version of a GAM, to a smaller degree. But the issue is we now have 27 teams. So that's where you get a little bit of a logjam. Of course, if you're on a wait list somewhere and you're towards the bottom, you're never going to get what you need, you know. And that continues to be an issue in the league, certainly when there's allocation rankings and all those kind of things. But I do think with the resources, teams can go out and get the kind of players that they think they need. And clearly, there's still teams that spend a lot more money than other teams, and that's all part of the exercise. That's no different in most sports. You know, we are not the top spenders in the league. I've been on both sides of that, and at the end of the day, you see, and again, you'd know this probably better than I, that I think over the last 10 years, if you look at it, I think a majority of the time the teams have the most resources generally end up playing in the last game of the season.
When you look at the way you can build this roster compared to 10 years ago, the profile of players that you're looking at, and I think of like Wilfred Kaptoum, who you brought in, versus 10 years ago, you're talking about Juninho and Marcelo Sarvas and players like that. Is the quality different? Is the depth different? Is it all fairly similar? How do you compare the styles?
The quality in the league is better. There's no question about that. I wouldn't argue that if you look at most rosters and you really examine them correctly, if you took away green cards, you know, it's a usually international rosters on every team. You know, we're probably one of the exceptions. We play a lot of U.S. passport holders, should I say. And if you look around the league, it's thick in rosters with international players for a variety of reasons and means. And, that's a change in the league for sure.
Let's take a look at one of those guys that's outside of sort of the Americans or passport holders. And that's Carlos Gil. And he is such a huge part of what you guys do, and he was such a huge part of that run in the playoffs, his return and then his play. We're going to rank the top five in every position on this show, just as an exercise to get excited about the season. We got the number 10s coming up. I consider him a 10, even though sometimes he plays a little bit more wide. Where should he stand for you in that conversation?
Who else do you call 10s in the league?
I mean, we got Zellerayan in there for sure. We got Reynoso in there, I would think. Ladero, I think we would Pozuelo. Say Ladero and Pozuelo both fit that.
Maxi Morales
would be another one. I mean, it's a crowded group. You have Pochettino coming in Austin as well.
He's in the top five in that, in that ranking, I would think, for sure.
What makes him so special to you, or to your team, I should say?
He's a complete player, which is unusual for a number 10. You see some of them are guys that play in the attacking half of the field, period. Carlos does whatever he needs to do to help our team. You know, we don't even mention a Carlos. You know, you have to defend. He defends. When he needs to defend, he defends. So you can play him out wide. He can be a playmaker playing out wide, or you can play him centrally. He understands the game. He accepts the responsibilities. Often you see some of the players that you've mentioned and other similar type of players there. Maybe I would describe them a little bit more one-dimensional. Carlos is fairly well-rounded. He can score goals. He can assist. He can defend. He can play fast. He can he can settle our team down. He can do a lot of things. And, he's a pretty special player.
We're not in the locker room with you guys. What is he like as a leader? Is he the vocal leader of this group?
Very quiet, but he comes to work every day. He's the way I described it, I've never seen a player. Well, I've seen. I need to correct myself there. He comes to work every day. Every day he gives the same effort. He's happy. He smiles. He doesn't complain. He works real hard. He doesn't want to be treated any different than anyone else. And with exception to his play, you wouldn't notice he's even around. You know, he's a special kind of guy.
One of the special moments of the postseason, and just for all of us that love this game, is watching Tejon Buchanan fly around him and overlap and do some of the things he did in the playoffs that we hadn't really seen before consistently from Tejon. The big question, at least for us, and maybe you know the answer, right back versus the wing, how do you fit him in? Does he need to be in this lineup, or is he still earning it in your eyes?
Well, he's still earning, but, you know, Will, you know, to date in preseason, he left today for Guadalajara for the U23 competition. We've played him in the midfield. We have a bunch of good players that play in outside back positions, and Bai and Jones, and now we have Mafla, and Tejon can play there. AJ can play there. So, you know, we're fairly solid in that position. So, you know, we want to see if we can push him up a little higher in the field, because in the last third of the field, he's a good player. And you saw that in the playoffs. The way we played in the playoffs, he was a half defender, half midfielder in the role he played. And he's certainly a good attacking player.
What does he need to do to be that effective player at that position, game in and game out?
More consistent, and he's still, you know, at the age of, I'm not even sure, he's 21, 22. He hasn't played enough at this level to really have any kind of consistency. Hopefully that can be achieved this year.
Let's take a look at Henry Kessler's side of that, because consistency and center backs and rookie years can sometimes fool you a little bit. I mean, I think about, we were talking about like an Austin Berry who won Rookie of the Year, then you didn't hear a ton from him after that. And then there are a laundry list of guys that got drafted and have had long, successful captain-type careers in Major League Soccer. Then I think back on guys you've drafted, Eddie Pope, 96. I mean, Omar Gonzalez is among those guys. AJ's back with you. He's had an amazing career. How good is Henry Kessler? How good can he be? Which of those sort of profiles do you think he fits into as far as his long-term?
I'm not sure he fits into any of those particular profiles. He's unique in himself, but he's I would say the best defender out of all those guys is probably Eddie Pope, and that's where Henry's an outstanding defender. He not only in his individual battles, but the way he can cover for other players, the way he reads the game, he's an excellent defender. I can't even recall how many goals that was scored against us last year that you would attribute to Henry being in that area where we broke down. He was very solid. He has great instincts as a defender, and you know, he's only going to get better.
What do you ask of him now? Like, what's the next step?
Oh, the next step for him is to be a better passer of the ball, be a better communicator on the field. But he's getting better in all those areas.
At a time right now where people are trying to figure out where young players come from in the U.S. and Canada, we just talked about two college draft picks, which is rare right now in MLS, but you've got a team that loaded with a number of ones that are effective. What do you see from these players now, how prepared they are to play at the pro level, and how you've been able to use the draft still over the last 3-4 years?
Well, as I told Henry when I drafted him, I told him I thought he'd probably be playing with Revolution 2 last year. So, you know, we didn't have any high expectations for him. The kid Kizza we have right now is good. And he's going to see some time in the field. You know, the top 10 kids that come out of college soccer are generally okay. And they can play in the league. Again, I don't even recall. Well, look at last year, DK and Henry. And I don't recall exactly who else was above them, but you still get players out of the college ranks. It's surprising. And then this year, the player we thought was the best striker in the draft, we ended up getting. So it's kind of interesting. And to still be able to utilize that mechanism is a real plus, because we drafted at 24 this year. We thought, you know, we were trying to get rid of all our draft picks and weren't able to do it. And we got fortune and we got a good player.
Hey, that worked
Bruce,
out
you
for
didn't
you.
Even have to show up this year and you still didn't want any picks?
I did show up, didn't I? For the draft? Oh, you mean... okay.
You don't have to go anywhere. It's Zoom now.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it, too, to be honest with you.
Let's before we sort of get into something a little bigger here, I want to ask you about Anbuksa, because you have Kizza that's come in, but ultimately in this league, you said it, teams that spend generally are there at the end of the season. DP's got a hit in this league more often than not. What did you tell Adam in his exit interview? There were really good moments from him, and there were other moments where maybe he was looking for more, maybe you were looking
well,
for more.
Well, he got better when it counted in the playoffs. So the way he played in the playoffs is the way he has to continue to play as we start 2021. And I think the way he played in Poland was he wasn't a a full time number nine kind of player. They, at times he played out wide. The level of play, in my opinion, is not up to the standard of MLS, and it was a little bit more difficult than he thought here. And he had to learn during the season, and he did. And, hopefully that year of experience will make him a better player in 2021.
For you, for foreign players, especially big signings, what's your timetable of your expectation of them? Because I think we've seen the example of it takes guys a year, 18 months, and sometimes we're talking about players who go on to be MVPs.
Yeah, it takes time. But look at, Carlos Gil, in 2 years, he's been an outstanding player. His first year, he was in the All-11. And last year, I don't think he disappointed anybody when he played. Gustavo Bo has been a little inconsistent, but he's still a dangerous goal scorer. So I think the DPs we have, we've gotten the mileage out of them. And I hate to even use that term. They're just other players on our team, But I think they've done well, and the fact that we've been able to get him here in New England is a plus.
And sometimes you get a difference maker on your team, not through DPs, not even through the draft, through a smart signing outside of the draft from the college ranks. I mean, Turner in goal is one of those guys you're like, thank God we got him. Thank God he developed. Look what he's going to become. Who is the best goalkeeper in MLS, and does he have an argument in that shout?
Again, I'm not into those. That's what you guys do.
Yeah, that is what we do. You're right.
I'm not into saying who's better than the next guy. I think, obviously, Blake in Philadelphia is a very good goalkeeper, and he's shown that year in and year out. In terms of Matt's first really full season was last year. So he's got a way to go before he can, start having the bragging rights of being the best goalkeeper in the league. He's got a way to go, but he's a good goalkeeper. Our goalkeeping coach Kevin Hitchcock is a very experienced coach and does an outstanding job with him on a daily basis. So he's getting better, but again, he's got a way to go. But I think he's been a difference maker for us as well. You'd like a goalkeeper being able to make one or two big saves in a game to keep in the game, protect the lead, whatever. And Matt did that on a fairly consistent basis last year. So that's a real plus for our team.
So you mentioned coaching staff a little. We had some questions because this is a Shalrie Joseph podcast. Just so you know, just warning you right off the bat, we love him. We're always excited about him. I'm a huge fan of his when we've talked about stuff, and we've seen him seem like work his way into maybe your first team staff. Have you brought him into the fold a little bit more coming into this preseason?
He's involved in our training every day. He's working in the academy program as well. I think he's a guy with a real bright future in coaching. Very bright, very experienced as a player. He's a player that was a thinker on the field. And when you talk to him today about the game, he's really got some great insight. He's got a great personality at the academy level. The academy kids just love him. And our players have the greatest respect for him because of, his accomplishments here with this club. So he's a coach with a great future.
There have been some tough conversations across society in the last year, Bruce, and we had some real ones with Tony Sané, who I know you know well, and Kobe Jones, same deal, about the opportunities maybe or lack thereof that they felt came to them after their playing careers. And, you know, Tony's like, I'd love to be a coach in MLS, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The Black Players for Change Coalition has made this a big part of what they talk about and what they're pushing for, which is more opportunity for Black players who retire, whether that be in front offices or in coaching staffs or whatever. Do you think MLS has a problem in that regard? How would we solve it if...
Well, MLS probably has a bigger problem in their front office than they do in teams. You know, first of all, the league is very diverse. Obviously, you can argue that there should be more head coaches. I don't know different backgrounds. I don't know exactly where the league stands right now in terms of how many Black coaches there are, if you want to use that term, Hispanic coaches, et cetera. But I think we have some decent representation. I haven't sat down and thought about it, but certainly can we be better? No doubt about it. I mean, we have a long way to go. That's why we're proud here at the Revolution. We're making a little progress in that area, but I didn't take Shalry on our staff because he's Black. He's here because he's a bright guy. He has a great future as a coach. Clint Pia, another African-American here, is our Revolution 2 coach. He wasn't selected because he's Black. I'd like to believe we're colorblind, but you know, that's easier said than done. But do we have to make progress in that area? No question about it. No question about it. And we are making progress. I think, you know, when you look at that in sports, you look at the NFL and you say, how can there only be four or five Black head coaches in the NFL? So right across the board in sport, we can certainly do a better job, and we will certainly be aware of that here. But I'd like to believe that I'm colorblind and we pick people here that we think are qualified, and that's what we've done. And there's no reason to believe, as our league continues to grow, that we're going to see more representation, not only in coaching staffs, but in administration at clubs as well as at the league level.
So, you know, when you talk about coaching trees, yours is the big tree that everyone's working off of. So you probably understand this better than any of us. And we've sort of been asking this question of, you know, how do you know with a former player when to start talking to them about coaching, or do they come approach you? How does this whole process work? Because it seems like that's one of our disconnects right now is, you know, who's thinking about that next step and who's being asked about that next step.
I think there are some players that when they finish playing have no interest ever getting into coaching, and some that do, and it becomes pretty clear. And when you do coach these athletes during their career, you have a sense of the guys that have the skill set to be coaches. And if you look around the league now, I'm again, don't hold me, don't put a gun to my head and trying to figure this out, but I see Chris Armas in Toronto. It wasn't surprising Chris got into coaching.
Yeah. Right?
Jim Curtin in Philadelphia, I didn't know Jim that well as a player, but he's done simply an outstanding job. I had Greg Vanney a bit in LA, and Greg was a pretty serious guy about the game. And you can go on, you know, Robin Frazier, there's no question he could be a coach. You know, so there's those kind of guys you see, you know, Savarese in Portland during their career. And when you coach them, you know they have the skill set to be coaches. And I have two former players of mine, in Richie Williams and Dave Vandenberg, on our staff. And Clint Pia, who played for me at UVA and DC United, and my staff here, Kurt Anolfo has played for me as our technical director now, and we also have Chris Tierney here working, former players. So these are guys that during their career you could have a sense. And when we see that there's guys that have those kind of skills, we try to give them opportunities. And, you know, it's never easy. Sometimes head coaches and don't have the time to really, you know, think about that. But, you know, it's pretty obvious to me when you look at your players on a daily basis, guys that could be coaches in the future. And certainly some of those guys you've mentioned with them. I would not have said that about Tony Sanna. But I heard, I was laughing. I was telling our coaches this. I turned on one of your interviews with him a few weeks ago, and Tony said that nobody realized that he played 9 positions on the national team. And I was saying to my guys, you know, I was a national team coach. I didn't even know that. So Tony was throwing a little, throwing a little stuff at you guys. Whatever could stick on the wall, he was going to take. But Tony didn't play 9 positions on the national
team. Oh man, can I ask you about Greg Berhalter? We didn't even mention his name in there. He was with you his first. You know, I we talked about 2011 here. That was his first year on your staff as an assistant after playing for you. What did you see then from him, and what do you see in him now as a peer and what he's doing?
You know, he was very serious and focused. He asked a lot of questions, and he continues to probe. I kind of see Greg continuing to be kind of like a student of the game, and he's still, he still doesn't have that much experience where, so he's still kind of trying to grasp, who he is as a coach, I think. You know, from my seat at a distance, he's still influenced by a lot of stuff he got in coaching school, but he's going to work his tail off. He's into, I know he has a real high opinion of the value of sports performance, metrics, analytics, all of that. So I think, that's the direction he goes as a coach now.
How do you connect with the national team? I mean, you have so much experience and time. Yeah, like, are you a fan? Are you do you still have your coaching hat on when you watch the team? Do you, like, sit down and get excited about watching national team games?
Not in the last year I haven't. I watched maybe 3 minutes of the El Salvador game, and I shut it off instantly to watch to watch something else. When they play good games and have good competition, I certainly enjoy watching, but I'm obviously going to be a fan of our national team and support them any way I can. You know, I've had conversations with Brian McBride and Ernie and Greg, about our players and those type of things. But, you know, I think it's been a tough couple of years for U.S. soccer, and they're trying to recover from not only the pandemic, but the lawsuits they had to deal with, obviously the team not qualifying for the last World Cup. So there's been a lot of that, and I think the smoke is settled now that they can try to get on and go about their business. They have a very good group of young players, and hopefully that means that that program's going to make a lot of progress.
What do you think the right expectation should be as we all sit around and talk about this thing and look forward and World Cup qualifying and the Gold Cup for this team, let's say in 2022? And is it crazy for us to sit around and say, could they win it in 2026? Or is that just so far ahead of things?
That's stupid talk, to be honest with you, saying stuff like that. Just dumb talk. You're talking about we're going to win a World Cup now? We didn't qualify, and now we're winning a World Cup.
I didn't say we were going to win it. People will, though. People will get excited about it. You know they will.
I do think the way the sport's growing in our country, the young players we have that when we play at home in 2026 and hopefully we have a good draw and all that stuff is important, that the U.S. will have a very competitive team in 2026. The goal in the short term should be to qualify for the next World Cup.
At the point of the 2026 World Cup, will the New England Revolution, who won an MLS Cup at that point, be one of the hosts?
I'd like to believe that they're going to choose Foxborough as one of the venues, but I certainly don't have any say in that matter. I know we're certainly interested. Aren't they going to make a decision on those venues this year at some point?
I think that's the word. That's basically going to decide where I live, where I take my family for the next whatever year. It's got to be there for that, man. That's once-in-a-lifetime stuff. We got to end you here, Bruce. I have to ask you this question. We have your quote from the last time you appeared on this show in our intro. It is, maybe this podcast has influenced me a little, and we're obviously tickled to hear you heard the Tony Sana interview. So how about a request/suggestion from me? Start a podcast. I would listen to it. Bruce, Steve Nash has one. Steve Kerr has one. Pete Carroll has one.
I was going to do a podcast before I got this job with the LA Times. But if someone wants to do all the work for me and set it up, I would do a podcast. But I see a lot of people getting in a lot of trouble with the social media stuff. And I get in enough trouble without it. So, maybe when I retire, I'll have a podcast and you'll hear some things that'll, you know, surprise a lot of people. But right now I'm going to try to stay away from social media as much as I can.
That's probably smart. How about this last one? Who would be your co-host? Who's your number one choice, your dream co-host to sit down with you every single week or however long it is and just talk soccer or the world or whatever?
That's a good question. I really don't know the answer to that question, but the one guy when I did television for ESPN, I thought working with Dave O'Brien was fabulous. Dave does now college basketball, but he does the Red Sox as well. He was a fabulous guy to work with, simply outstanding. But I have to think about it a little bit, and I'll find the right co-host at the right time.
Yeah, let us know. If you want somebody to set it up and make it no work for you, I'm raising my hand right now. We will make it zero work.
Yeah, you write the contract, and we'll get it done.
All right, I'll have to work on the money side of that, but maybe we can find it. Maybe we can find it. Bruce, we appreciate your time as always for being frank and sitting down with us. Thank you so much. Looking forward to seeing the Revs and seeing, quote-unquote, a normal year this year.
I think it's going to be a great year for the league. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. I think he warmed up a little bit at the end there. And I also just want to note that Bruce is consuming a little extra time. So we can put him in that intro. We can joke about how he learned a few things from this podcast. But Bruce, you might be picking up a thing or two. All right. Anything there, Dave, that like the one thing that maybe stands out to you? Or do we just let people hit us up in the mailbag and take their takes and run?
I just think the big one was how quick he was to say Tejon Buchanan's a winger. And that's where he'll be this year. And he talked about what he needs to do to be better at it. But I was surprised how quick that came out from him, especially when Bruce can be cagey at times if he wants to.
And when it was so good in that like five-man back line last year in the playoffs, we'll see what they do. They have a lot of depth. He has a lot of options. He can go where he wants to go. Let's do our top five. They do. Come on, don't furrow your brow at me.
It wasn't a five-man back line.
Yeah, it wasn't a five-man back line.
Just playing an overlapping right back as a modern fullback.
Oh, that's a good correction. I forgot about that.
Bruce hasn't used a five-man back line since 2002 against Germany in the quarterfinals.
In my mind, I was like, the amount of freedom that Tejon had, it must have been, obviously my memory kills me here. All right, let's see the goalkeepers. Top five. Dave, take it away.
So, obviously, different ways you can debate this, who deserves to be on it and where they stand. I think the obvious top two is Andre Blake and Matt Turner. I have Andre Blake number one, who I voted for as goalkeeper of the year. There's a lot of different reasons you could go about this. One of those is, while Blake's had some down years, you've seen him for longer. Matt Turner, no question, the ability he has, what he can do with the ball as well, besides shot stopping, but I just want to see it for another year. So one is Andre Blake, two is Matt Turner, three is Stefan Fry, another one, longevity and top-end quality. I don't think there's a goalkeeper in this league you'd rather have start a playoff game than Stefan Fry. Number four.
I have to jump in here.
Yeah.
It, like 15 minutes into MLS Cup, I remember talking about this with Anders because Fry had already made a couple of big saves. And I was like, Anders, we got to start getting a reel together of Stefan Fry's best MLS Cup saves. Because honestly, if the Sounders win this, then he's got a claim as the best MLS goalkeeper of all time. And then Zeller Ryan scored that first one, which Fry probably should have saved. And that reel was never made. But Stefan Fry, obvious top three. Go ahead.
Number four is the other playoff guy you want to have right now, which is Tim Melia, the PK saver. He's been consistent over the last few years, and I think he's held a lot of things down as Casey struggled defensively at times with his ability to organize the back line and his communication. And then right now, number five was a tough one. There was five or
really
six
tough
names that could be in. I went from my list with Pedro Gallese. I think you look at one, high-level international, what he's done outside of MLS, and then coming in, you could see the difference he made for Orlando, especially when he was and wasn't there. I think you talk about all the things you can do technically as a goalkeeper and then making huge saves, but I also think there's a level of leadership and emotional leadership that he brings to this group, which some other goalkeepers don't, and he gets a little plus because he splits the spot with Rodrigo Schlegel. So that's my number five, is the two of them combined.
Huge plus. Not a little plus.
My first one out was Eloy Room and then Sean Johnson. Those were the two that I didn't know what to do with. I talked to a lot of people around the league. I got a lot of Dane St. Clair, in there, mm-hmm. and I figured Doyle would bring it up as well.
Yep.
It's too soon to put him in that list.
Yeah, I
agree. He started 15 or 16 games, but that's his future. So there you guys go.
Who else would be in the snubs? I'm trying to. Steve Clark has played extremely well over the last 2 years in Portland. Yeah, you had. You know, I have a soft spot in my heart for Joe McDonald Willis, but you know, I think you're probably right that he would want to be not want to be in here. Eloy Room was the one I thought you might have higher, though.
Yeah, same.
Thought you might have him higher.
Give me the argument.
I'm trying to think how and who I would push out, and that's the hard part, right? Like. Because I would have this be in the same place with like a Sean John of saying like move him up, and if I was Ben Bear, I would be sitting here yelling Bill Hamid at you like over and over and over and over and over again.
I think
this might be one of the hardest we've done.
Melia is still above God tier on penalties, but I don't think he's the keeper he was 2 or 3 years ago from open play. Even though he made spectacular save on Wando late in that playoff game, he's still really, really good. I think there's an argument that Tim Melia is no longer a top five keeper in this league. Obviously, we do need to see more from Dane St. Clair, but you could not ask for more from a young keeper over his first 15 games. I think the argument for Room is that... Well, I don't know if the argument for Room is great yet, but like he certainly he looked really, really good, and he looked like a complete goalkeeper for a team that won MLS Cup. That's a pretty solid argument, but we probably do need to see more of that in MLS.
I mean, some of the saves he makes are beyond absurd, but time matters. It's a good list. Goalkeeper is a deep class. Let us know what you think. We'll put that on Twitter as we have with all these, and jump in there, argue with us, tell us why we're wrong or why we're right or somewhere in between. Let's hit the mailbag, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Haven't reminded anybody to do this on this show, so probably should. Hey, subscribe. Subscribe, rate us, tell your friends about us, help us, I don't know, grow, I guess is not the way I would put it. Help us grow this little community. Yeah, we're all here just loving MLS and North American soccer. Like, come love it with us. Producer Honor's reminder of the day. His reminder here is, as soon as Josh Sargent started taking Matt Doyle's Twitter advice, he started scoring goals. Is that a coincidence?
My Twitter advice to Josh Sargent is make the runs that Jossie Zard does, and you will score more tap-ins. And yesterday, he scored himself a tap-in. The game before that, he scored himself a wide-open header from about 6 yards out. He's now got, I think, 4 goals in his past 7 games. A couple of those were just straight bangers, but straight bangers is not how you become a consistent goal scorer. You have to get those one-time finishes from inside the 6-yard box. Guys like Jossie and Wando have made an absolute living off of that. Like, Lewandowski will score 50 goals this year. 35 of them will be one-touch finishes from, like, inside the 6 or the second 6-yard box. That is where Josh Sargent has to be better. I was really, really encouraged by this goal because of the run he made to set up the defender beforehand. He feinted to the near post, got the defender to take 2 steps, and then drifted to off his back shoulder, made a good hard run. That's how you get tap-ins. That's what we need from Josh Sargent.
We've got a good one here about Mbappe and Haaland, but I think we're going to hold it because I want more time to discuss it. So we'll do a quick one. Sam Stachel, Paul Tenorio, and I were texting about these NBA Top Shots, and we decided that there's going to be an MLS version. And of course, Sam is going to collect all the New Who clips that he can, although I will, before he can get to it, get New Who kicking a beer can, because I think that is the classic one. What would be your MLS Top Shot purchase? You can purchase one. Price does not matter. I mean, as if there was a market for this right now. But if there was, what would number one for you be?
There is, man. Some dude just paid $60 million or something like that for a NFT art. Like, there is a market for this for super rich people, even though it, you know, burns down rainforests and stuff to generate the correct amount of electricity. Anyway, I would take Q versus David Beckham. Easy call.
Ah, that's a good one. That's a great one. That's a really good one. You're taking the full clip. You're taking David whipping in the ball that hits somebody, and then all the back and forth, and Bingham coming. Okay, that's a great one. I was off the top of my head thinking of a couple. One of them is Kai Kamara's epic, how did he possibly miss that moment at Community mm-hmm. America Ballpark, where it's just him on the goal line with the ball literally bouncing in front of him, and he somehow takes a swing and misses. That would be one. Another one would be at Community America Ballpark again. David Beckham hits the midfield goal and then argues for a long time with fans afterwards in the stands. That was a classic moment that I was there for. But I think number one has to be Zarek Valentin explaining the away goals rules to the Portland Timbers when they believed that they had won, but they had not won. And on their faces, it looks like school children being like, explain the laws of physics. And they're like, that doesn't make any sense. Nobody ever told me that. Like, what are you talking about? So that would be mine. I think I go
away
purchase
goals,
that one.
Away goals are dumb, and it's especially dumb when they count in extra time, as our friends at Juventus found out the other day. Anyway. Yes.
Dave, what are you buying?
Mine's more serious. I was going to go Alphonso Davies' goal in the Audi Field opener. We were there.
That was a great
And also, Alphonso Davies rising my value. You want to give me something for free? I'll ride those coattails all the way through a FIFA Best 11. That's
meanwhile, I'm picking up the Emil Assad from that same game, and I'm marketing exclusively to Atlanta United fans. We'll see who comes out on top in this. Thank you for listening, everybody. Appreciate you, of course. Thank you to Bruce Arena for sharing so much of his time. Next week, we start with our capsules. We're going to go through all 27 teams, give them about 10 minutes each, really dive deep. So we will start that on Monday. Also on Monday, the call-up will join us for our first ever collabo here for this. So we'll see you then. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. Cool. Fun show. Fun show. Fun show. Fun show. Fun show. Fun show.